You've seen the linear conjugate gradient method with the test of Bevilacqua. I wrote it on the blackboard. Actually, Professor Bevilacqua introduced this method to you to solve the linear system AX equal B, where B is a vector in Rn, and A is a n times n, 10 by n matrix, which is positive definite. In the first part of the lecture, I will review a little bit this method from the point of view of optimization. So I will give you some further details on the method, and to do this I will probably need to tell you also a few things you have already seen with Professor Bevilacqua. So the idea is that this linear system is equivalent to the minimization of this quadratic function. Since A is positive definite, this function is strictly convex, and it's quadratic also, and so we know by optimality condition that minimum points are exactly stationary points, and stationary points are nothing else than the solution of this linear system, because the gradient of f is ax minus b. Okay, so this is the idea. So this is actually an optimization method. Okay? And somehow it comes from the family of gradient methods, from the gradient method actually, and it has some differences. And the point is here, in the choice of the direction. Okay? You have here a concrete alternative to choosing the steepest descent direction, which is minus the gradient of f at the current point. While when I discussed gradient methods with an exact line search, at an iteration of the algorithm, you have choose a descent direction, okay? And all the convergence property were fine whatever direction you have chosen, okay? Here you have a concrete case, a concrete choice. And notice that, clearly RK, the residual, is minus the gradient of f at the current point xk. Okay? So, consider the first iteration only. Okay, k equals 0. As direction, you take minus the gradient. So, you're doing a gradient method. And as I will show you in a moment, this formula for the step size is exactly the one provided by the exact line search. So, the first iteration is exactly the same of the gradient method, the original gradient method with exact line search. But afterwards, you modify the search direction. At the next iteration, you will no longer take minus the gradient at the current point, but minus the gradient at the current point plus beta k times the previous direction. Okay? So you keep track in the direction of the previous direction. Okay? So for k equal 1, you will take into account not only minus the gradient of f at x1, but also at x0, and so on, for the next iterations. Okay. Professor Bevilacqua showed you a few properties, which I simply recall. So let's suppose, okay, that the residual Rk is different from zero for all k's which are less than some k bar. Okay? Once the residual is zero, you stop, so the algorithm is finite. Suppose you have done a few iterations and you never stopped. Okay? You arrived at iteration k bar. You have these properties. Professor Bevilacqua proved. Rk and Rj are orthogonal. For each j which is smaller than k. And k is any real number less or equal than k bar. Okay? So the residual are orthogonal. Second property, which gives the name to the algorithm, the directions are A conjugate, meaning that the scalar product of dk with A times dj is zero. Okay? In the gradient method, original gradient method with exact searching, you had that successive directions were orthogonal. Okay? Let's say it was this property with A equal 1 and J equal K minus 1. Okay? So this is the conjugation property, and it's the one which makes the algorithm work, always for the same case. Then you have a third property, which tells you that Rk is also orthogonal to dj. And there's a fourth property, which I don't think Professor Bevilacqua showed you, so this is new, which tells you that dk has the same scalar product with the R0 than Rk with itself. You can easily prove this property relying on the previous ones and the formulas. I will not make the proof. It is a proof by induction, okay? And it's pretty easy. It's not essential for us, but I will use it to show you a step, so I write it down, okay? So, let's take a look at this property from an optimization point of view. Property triple A is the one that gives you
descent. Thanks to that property, this is a descent method. We know that the gradient method, the original gradient method, is a descent method. But here we are keeping track of the previous iterations in the direction, so it's not that obvious. So you have to check that the scalar product of dk with the gradient of f at xk is negative. And you know that this is minus rk scalar product with dk. And then you can replace dk with this expression. Okay? So that this is minus rk times rk minus beta k, the scalar product of, I'm sorry, yeah, of rk with dk minus k. We know by property 3 that this is 0. Okay. So this is minus the norm of rk squared. So it's negative, unless rk is 0. Okay. So this is telling us that this is a descent method. I guess you already checked this with Professor Bevilacqua, probably. Second part is this one, which I already told you. This step side is the step side of the exact line search. How can we check this? Well, this is given by step four and condition triple A once again. Well, you can consider the search function tk at t, which is the value of f at xk plus t times dk. Okay. We know that tk is positive. It cannot be zero because this is the scalar product of rk with itself, so it's the square of its norm. And this is positive because a is positive definite. So the step side is positive. Moreover, if you compute its derivative at tk, you know that the derivative is this scalar product. And you know that this gradient is as some form, as this form. You substitute, you make a few algebraic steps, and you will find that this is zero, taking this tk. Okay? So I'm not spending your time on these algebraic details. You have on my notes and already Professor Bevilacqua showed them to you to compute this. But I wanted to stress that this is the exact line search. We will see that this will be a trouble when we try to make a conjugate gradient method for functions which are more general than a strictly convex quadratic function. Okay? So this will be a source of trouble. Then, Professor Bevilacqua told you that this is a finite method. You achieve convergence in a finite number of steps. The algorithm will stop at most after n iterations. The fact is that all pair of residual are orthogonal to each other. So it means that
R0, R1, RK
are linearly independent. Okay,
so at most when you have k equal n, you have that R0, R1, Rn should be
n plus 1 linearly independent vectors. This is not possible in Rn,
so it must be that Rn is 0.
Unless you stop earlier. Okay, so this gives you finite convergence. Now, I have a specific goal, which I tell you. I want to show you that the sequence xk minimizes f over a nested sequence of subspaces. Okay? Exactly, x1 will minimize. Will minimize f on a line, x2 will minimize f on a plane, which contains that line, x3 will minimize the function of a three-dimensional subspace, which contains the two previous ones, and so on, and you grow until you invade the whole space. Is it clear? This is my goal, okay? You didn't see this with Professor Bevilacqua, so you are... It is hidden here. You don't say it explicitly, but you are minimizing of subspaces of increasing size. To do this, I need to show you a property, to show an additional property. As condition I allowed us to prove that the RJs are linearly independent, condition two allows us to prove that also the directions DJs are linearly independent. And this will be the heart of the proof. Of the increasing, of the minimization of increasing subspaces that I told you a moment ago. So,
I want to show you that D0, D1, DK are linearly independent.
Okay? And I will do it by induction. So,
let's suppose that D0, D1, DK not minus 1 are linearly independent. Okay?
So, this is the inductive hypothesis. Okay, let's prove that if you add dk, you still have a set of linearly independent vectors. How do you do it? You go by contradiction.
Suppose dk can be written as gamma 0 d0 plus gamma 1 d1 plus gamma k minus 1 dk minus 1. For some coefficients gamma i's, okay? For some coefficients gamma 0, gamma 1, gamma k minus 1. Okay? I'll show you that all these coefficients have to be 0. Let's write dk times a dk.
Okay, this is positive, since a is positive definite, unless dk is zero. Okay.
So here I can keep dk here and substitute its expression here. Okay. So we are having dk times gamma zero times a d zero plus gamma k minus one d k minus one. Okay. And this is gamma zero times dk transpose a d zero plus gamma k minus one dk transpose a dk minus one. Okay. What's the value for this?
We can apply the second property up there. Okay? This is zero.
This is zero, this is zero, this is zero. All of them are zero. So this is zero.
Okay? Since this is zero, and a is positive definite, this leaves just one possibility. Dk is zero.
Okay. So dk is zero.
But now, so zero is equal to this sum, the dj's with appropriate coefficients. But we know that d0, d1, dk minus 1 are linearly independent. So the only possibility for them to be, for a sum of this kind to be zero, is that gamma 0, gamma 1, gamma k minus 1 are all equal to zero. Okay? So,
in this way, we proved that dk is linearly independent with the others.
We just applied the definition. If it is linearly dependent, then also the others have to be, so it doesn't work. This is the property we need. What? Because now this allows me to define the subspaces. May I erase this blackboard, okay, because I need the other three.
So here we know that d0, d1, dk are also linearly independent.
And I define,
I put it here, since we have this property, the subspaces generated by D0, generated by D0 and D1, by D0, D1 and D2, and so on. Okay. So Sk is the vector T
subspace of Rn generated by d0 d1 decay. So is the set of points of this curve sum for j that goes to 0 to k of alpha j dk, where alpha 0, alpha 1, and alpha k are arbitrary coefficients in numbers. Okay? So, when you have d0, sorry, I need to be a bit more careful. I want to have k vectors generating sk, so the sum should be from 0 to k minus 1, since we start from 0. Okay? So, S1 is the line generated by d0. S2 is the plane generated by d1 and d0, and so on, okay? S3 is the three-dimensional subspaces generated by d0, d1, and d3. One here, and the other here, for instance, okay? And you go on. Since they are linearly independent, the dimension of this subspace is exactly k, okay? The number of generators. Dimension 1, dimension 2, dimension 3, and so on. And now I can prove you the theorem, which says the following. Consider the sequence generated by the linear conjugate gradient method. Okay? We know that this is a finite sequence because at most you have n iterations. Well, what you can prove is that f at xk is the minimum value that f attains, okay, on the subspace Sk translated by S0. Okay? You take, let's make the picture in two dimensions. Okay, let's suppose we are in Earth. Okay? We have D0. Okay? S0 is this one. Okay? If you want x minus x0 to be, and suppose this is x0, you want it to be in sk, you are taking these points. Okay? This is the set of points s, this is, let's say, x0 plus sk, if you like it best. You take, this is a bit informal. You take x0 and you sum it to the subspace, so you translate the subspace from the origin of a vector x0. Okay? So technically speaking, this is a vector subspace. This is an affine subspace, so a translation of a vector subspace. What the theorem is telling you is that xk minimizes the expansion on this space. Notice that xk can be written as x0 plus t0 d0 plus tk minus 1 dk minus 1. Okay? Because this is x1, then you add t1 d1 and so on. Okay, so xk minus x0 belongs to sk. Okay, so first of all, this point is a point in this set. Okay, it belongs to that affine subspace. Is it clear? Is it? So, just think of the line. This is S1 passing through 0, then you move it of a vector x0. Okay? Nothing else than that. And notice, and then we will make the proof, which is pretty easy. That this is another way to show that the algorithm stops after at most n iterations. Okay? Because we have S1, which is contained in S2. Okay? Just take S2 and take LJ1 to be 0. Okay? The second part to be 0, which is contained in S3, which is contained in Sn, and what is Xn? You have d0, d1, dn minus 1, which are linearly independent, and you have all their linear combinations. So this is the whole array. Okay? Unless you stop earlier, Xn provides the minimum value of f over the full space. Okay? So this is another way to prove that the algorithm stops after a finite number of iterations. And the proof exploits a simple idea. So this is a constrained optimization problem. So, up to now, we don't know how to solve it. But, we know how these vectors are done. Okay. These vectors have this form for arbitrary coefficients LJs. Okay. So, here, I can also write this problem in this way. I want to minimize let's see what. Okay. F of x now, let's keep it still this way. And here, rather than this, we write then x is equal to x0 plus alpha 0 d0 plus alpha k minus 1 dk minus 1. Okay, and alpha 0, alpha 1, alpha k minus 1 are arbitrary coefficients in alpha. Okay? So here, this is fixed. What is changing? Alpha 0, alpha 1, alpha k minus 1. Okay? So I can consider this as a function of these variables. Okay? So we can define ck of alpha 0, alpha k minus 1 to be f computed at this point.
x0 plus alpha 0 d0 plus alpha 1 d1 and so on plus alpha k minus 1 dk minus 1.
Okay.
So that this problem can be written now as the minimization of this function c of variables L0, L1, Lk minus 1, and the variables are free to take any value. Okay. So, this is a standard technique to transform some particular constrained optimization problem into an equivalent unconstrained optimization problem. Okay? Because we know this explicit expression of x, which depend on some coefficients which can take any values. Okay? What's the point here? Well, the point here is that we already studied a little bit unconstrained optimization problems. We know optimality conditions, for instance. Okay. Well, we know nothing about constrained optimization. We will focus on constrained optimization only in the second half of the course. And then we have some good properties. Okay. F is strictly convex and quadratic. Exercise CK has exactly the same properties. Is strictly convex and quadratic. Since F is has both these properties. Now, actually what I need is just strictly convex. What do we know about strictly convex optimization problems? Think about optimality condition. It is convex. So we have a complete characterization of optimality, which is the gradient takes value zero at minimum point. Okay. It's minimum point, you can only if the gradient is zero. Second is the function, the objective function is strictly convex, which is a property of strictly convex optimization problems. Okay, the objective function has to be strictly convex and the physical region has to be convex, but it is the full space, so it is convex. What property? We have one of the lectures at the beginning of October. How many optimality solutions can you have? Only one, exactly. So, we have two information. Solutions are exactly the stationary points, and since the problem is strictly convex, there exists at most one solution. Okay? This is all we need to prove that property. We need to compute the gradient of this function. Okay? Well, let's compute its derivative with respect to alpha I. Okay? The variables are the alpha j's, so let's compute this derivative. And then we want it to be zero. Okay? This is the composition of two functions, the function that sends L0, Lk minus 1 into this vector, and the function f. Okay? So this is, the derivative is given through the chain rule for And we know it is the gradient of f in this point. Times
what? The derivative of this argument with respect to alpha j, no, alpha I. Alpha I is just in this form, alpha I times dj. So what is left when you take the derivative is dj. Okay, you can do this component by component of this vector, so here you are left with di.
Okay. So we know that alpha 0, alpha k minus 1 provide the unique solution if and only if all these scalar products are 0. Okay, for all i's. Now,
should we solve this? No, we don't need to solve this because we have some information.
We have some information we can exploit. Let's take the scalar products of the gradient of f at xk with bi.
Okay?
Well, okay, the gradient is minus the residual. So you have this. And so we have this property, triple A, which tells us that this is zero.
And we are done. Why we are done?
Okay, we know that xk solves this system. Okay? This system of equations. But we know that this system has a unique solution. Okay? Since there is a unique point for which all these derivatives are zero, there are unique values for this, which gives a point in Rn, and we know that this point must be xk. So we know that this is equal to this. Okay? So, alpha 0, alpha k minus 1, minimize this function, if and only if they have this property, and those alpha 0, alpha k minus 1, can be anything but those which provide xk, because xk has that same property. And there can be just one vector with that property. Okay? So, xk is exactly the point which minimizes that expression, because the two problems are equivalent. The problems in the variables alpha j is the same of the problem in the variables x there, okay? So this tells you exactly that. You transform the problem, you solve it, and you go back. Okay? We could solve this problem by optimality condition. We got this formula, we realized that this can be just xk, and so this is the solution of this problem, and equivalently this must be equal to this and is the solution of the other formulation of the problem.
So this gives you a proof of this case.
There's another proof you find on my lecture notes, which is a bit longer, but maybe you like it best, because it doesn't involve much theory. You can simply show that C has this form, is f at zero, at x zero, sorry, plus this. Let's say j from zero to k minus one. Okay, and then so you can compute explicitly the derivatives and take the values of alpha i's. Okay, you can compute the derivative explicitly, not in this form. And if you compute the alpha i's, you will find that alpha I is equal to ti. Okay, you find it on the lecture notes. You can do a direct computation of the derivative. I showed you this property because it's theoretical, you don't have to, here is alpha squared. Okay? It explains you how sometimes you can transform a constrained problem into an unconstrained problem, and we use the theory of optimality condition that we use. So, somehow it is more elegant. This other is easier. All of these are polynomial of degree 2, okay? Alpha i's appear alone, so you don't have any kind of these terms or even worse terms. So all of these are parabolas, so you can compute the minimum pretty easily. So my goal in this hour, and we are a bit late, was to show you this property. Okay? Additional information. Linear quantum gradient method is a method that generates a finite sequence of points, which are minimum points over nested affine subspaces, which invade the whole space. Okay? So, now let's take a break so that you can ask me questions, and then I'll start discussing how can we go beyond this case. Okay? This case is called the linear because it comes from a linear system, but it's actually the minimization of a strictly convex quadratic function.